Good morning, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway, and we have what our friends in the media would call breaking news for you today. But before I tell you what it is, let me start with four big questions. Number one, do you believe that America has what we might refer to as a soul? Number two, if so, would you agree that America has lost its soul, going back for at least 60 years or more? Number three, if that is so, what are the signs of losing our soul and what has caused it to happen? And that leads to number four, finally the big question, what can we do today to help restore this soul of America, and why does it matter anyway? Now, let me give you a minute for that to sink in, those four big questions.
I think we all need a minute for those.
Restoring the soul of America. Well, okay, your minute is up. And all I can say is that I'm so glad that Rita is with us today because, and this is the breaking news, she has just written a book entitled Restoring America's Soul. And today, we're going to give her the stage as she takes on the challenging questions that we just posed to you. So, if we were in a large auditorium, I would ask all of you to stand. If you're driving, just stay seated. But I would ask all of you to stand and give Rita a warm valley welcome as she takes on this important challenge about restoring America's soul. But we're not in a large auditorium, so all I can say is, Rita, welcome to Crossroads.
There's certainly no room in here in the studio for a bunch of people standing up or clapping.
I can clap at least.
But thank
you. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Dean. It's really exciting to be able to talk about my new book on the program, and I'm excited to have our Crossroads audience be some of the very first people in the country to be able to hear about the book and what's in it.
We are debuting Rita's book, and we're just glad to be able to do that. We're going to be doing a series of programs on this book. And so can you tell us right up front where people can get a copy of your book so they can follow along with us in the coming weeks?
Absolutely. I like to think about this as a sort of a crossroads book study or a book club that we're doing with our listeners. And I think it'll really be fun for us to have this dialogue and people to be able to listen, but also to follow along in their own copies as we go through chapter by chapter. If people would like to order the book, what I would recommend right now is ordering it from my website, which is RitaMDunaway.com.
M as in?
Mary.
Mary.
Yes.
I was going to say Mama.
That's a great way to remember it. So RitaMDunaway.com, the first page you'll see there has a picture of the book and a button you can click to order it. What that does is it lets you order it straight from the publisher, which means right now you'll get it more quickly. You can also go to Amazon, and right now the button says pre-order because Amazon takes a little bit longer to get their stock in. But if you don't want to pay the shipping and you're an Amazon member, you can get it there as well.
But we need it by next week.
Yes.
So it's better to go through your website.
Yes, that'd be great.
You know, Rita, I have to say, writing a book is a heavy job. Let me give a little background to our listeners on Rita and her qualifications for doing this. First of all, as many of you know from previous programs, she is currently serving as the National Legislative Strategist for Convention of States Action, or the Convention of States Project, some people would say. But prior to joining COS, Rita spent approximately 10 years as staff counsel for the Rutherford Institute located in Charlottesville, where she was working under the direction of John Whitehead to protect civil liberties nationwide. And as a constitutional attorney, she is admitted to practice law before the U.S. Supreme Court and has authored numerous briefs for the court and for the federal appellate courts. Now, she's also an allied attorney for the National Respected Alliance Defending Freedom and an advisor for both our Valley Family Forum and for the Virginia Christian Alliance in Richmond. In all of these roles, Rita has been involved in the public policy process and regularly testifies before legislative committees at the Virginia General Assembly. In addition, she is a nationally syndicated columnist who has been published on The Stream, WorldNet Daily, The Blaze, and who also has a column that appears each Saturday in the Daily News Record. As you know, she co-hosts this program with me every week, and before that was often a featured guest on our weekly TV program entitled Valley Faith in Action. Finally, as a presidential scholar at West Virginia University, Rita earned dual bachelor degrees in 1998, graduating summa cum laude from both the journalism and the political science departments. She then continued her education as a Benedum Scholar at Washington and Lee University School of Law, from which she graduated again summa cum laude in 2001. Well, Rita, there's a lot there, but tell us which of these roles you consider most important and for which you are most proud.
Well, that is an easy one for me, Dean. Of everything I've ever done, what's most precious to me is my family, being a wife and a mom. There is no more meaningful, more rewarding work that I can even imagine doing.
Well, I should have put that in your bio. I'll try to remember that next time.
I don't know that that qualifies me to write a book about restoring America's soul, but
that
yeah,
gives
it's
you
precious
field experience,
me.
Doesn't it?
There you go.
Well, thank you, Rita. And now let's get started on your new book. Tell us in a nutshell what it's all about and why you decided to write it.
Well, two factors compelled me to write the book. First of all, I started to notice how much room for improvement there was in the way conservatives talk about issues. I've been involved in the conservative movement for quite some time now in various capacities. And what I noticed specifically was that we tend to oppose public policies sometimes without defining what we believe to be the better alternative to them. And that in doing this, we also sometimes fail to be gracious and winsome in our manner. And I've observed how this really turns off people who might otherwise be open to the actual policy position that we're expressing, and especially younger people. And we'll talk about that a little bit more, I think, in a few minutes. But I'm concerned about seeing young people sort of write off conservatives as people who are just frustrated and angry.
Well, I might say there, Rita, they have never heard the conservative viewpoint, especially if they've gone to many of our colleges who don't have any knowledge of it themselves.
Yeah. So that was one of the concerns. I want younger people especially to have a source for really understanding what the conservative vision and viewpoint really is. Second, there was a specific thing that happened. I attended an event, you know, it was one of these banquets where there was a keynote speaker, and I heard a conservative there, and this was a pretty prominent conservative. He defined conservatives as people who don't like change. And he wasn't giving the definition in a formal sense. It was just in the course of a conversation he was having with me where he said, well, we conservatives are people who don't like change. And that really stuck with me for a while. And I thought a lot about it later. And the thing is, that really doesn't describe why I am a conservative personally. But it got me thinking about what it does mean to be a conservative. And I realized over the course of some time that these two issues, how we talk about public policy and how we talk about what a conservative is, really expose an identity crisis in the conservative movement that I think we have to resolve. One of my favorite C.S. Lewis works is The Abolition of Man. And within that, Lewis talks about how modern education at that point, and I would say continuing today, sought to starve young people of their passion and their emotions, teaching them to sort of scoff at emotion or real convictions about anything. And Lewis explained that real education should not be about starving passion and emotion, but about training them toward what is good and true. I think that whole concept has a lot of application in our culture and in our politics today. And that's really, I think, the broad point I'm trying to make in this book. Too often, conservatives can come across as wet blankets because we're not doing a good enough job of conveying the beauty and the goodness and the inspiration of our worldview.
Well, that's really interesting, Rita, because I have just finished rereading your book, and I was struck by how often, starting with your introduction in the book, that you refer to goodness, truth, beauty, and virtue. Time and time again, those words pop out. So can you tell us why those words mean so much to you?
Yeah, well, a couple of reasons. I mean, for me, the reason those words are so meaningful is because they're really sort of attributes of my King and Savior. Goodness, truth, beauty, virtue, those are characteristics of God and of Jesus Christ. But even more broadly, even for people who aren't necessarily Christians, that's really what we should be about in our life, in our society. These are what we should be striving toward. We should not be living our life as a reaction against things, but as a striving toward goodness, truth, beauty, and virtue.
Rita, that just brings to mind a scripture. The first chapter of John, where they said, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory as of the only Son of God, full of grace and truth." So that's the bar.
Beautiful.
That's
yes,
the bar that exactly. He sets for us, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, Rita, let me give our listeners an overview of how the book is set up. We have a foreword by Michael Ferris, who I know has been a mentor to you and you consider a personal friend. Our listeners might recognize his name as the person who started Homeschool Legal Defense Association, Patrick Henry College, and the Convention of States Project. Today, he is the president of Alliance Defending Freedom, and I'll say a little bit more about his foreword later. Then we have your introduction, Rita, where you explain, as you did just now, why you wrote the book and what you hope to accomplish through it. That really sets the tone for the rest of the book, and again, we'll talk about that in just a minute. But after that, and this is a beautiful setup, the book is divided into three parts. Part one is called A Conservative Identity Crisis, and you touched on that just a minute ago. It talks about how conservatives can do a better job with their messaging to the broader population and how we can present our views in a more winsome way. It also challenges our culture's tendency today to dismiss the idea of objective truth or a universal moral law. And finally, still in part one, you review the various ways America is really rooted in conservative, and I would add Christian, principles. Then you go to part two, which is really sort of a primer designed to help conservatives articulate our viewpoint a little better on some of the most challenging, controversial issues of our day. These include caring for the poor, protecting religious liberty, defending human life, promoting natural marriage. And one of the things I really enjoy about this portion of the book is that at the end of each chapter, you've included a little elevator speech that sums up how we can very briefly summarize the conservative view on each of these issues. And then part three, this is so important. It's all about application because you lay out two strategies for restoring America's soul. The first one has to do with restoring our government, and the second one is about restoring a culture of virtue. Does that about cover it?
You did a great job covering it, Dean. And
that's what you get for reading it a couple of times.
Yes. A couple of things I want to point out about the book that just to give you a little bit more backstory, I had a couple of goals the whole time I was writing the book, and I'd love listener feedback from people who read the book about whether they think I met my goals or not. I wanted to write it in a way that people who are not attorneys would be able to clearly comprehend and understand what I'm talking about. I've read some great books that I enjoyed, but were hard to read, you know, were hard to wrap my brain around because I didn't have all the jargon down. And so I didn't want to write that way. I wanted to write in a way that was easy for anyone to understand, no matter what your background.
I say that part three is so important because I hear many sermons that are great in theory, great in doctrine, but so what?
Yeah.
And I hope we can all ask that question after we write a book, and I don't intend to.
Yeah.
But if I do, you have to have that closing. So what? Why does this matter?
Yeah, and that's the other point that I wanted to make, was my other goal was to have a book that gave people some practical things that they could sink their teeth into. What can I do today? And so that's really what part three is about. I've read lots of great books that I agreed with everything they said, but then at the end I was left with, okay, what do I do?
Exactly. Well, we've got that to look forward to. But for now, we've covered the format and your purpose, and we'll dig into chapter one next week. So folks, order your books now. But let's spend a few minutes today discussing your introduction. You start off by talking about the 2016 presidential election season. Why did you begin with that?
Okay, well, I might get in trouble with some people here, but it's going to be true confession time.
Not here.
I was appalled by what unfolded during the 2016 election season. The Trump campaign and figuring out how to deal with it was really difficult for me. And I want to be perfectly clear. I think President Trump has done a lot of things right so far. I appreciate many of the things he has done to protect religious liberty and to stand up for human life. But I'm concerned about what his election says about the American people and about how it will ultimately affect the conservative movement as we go forward.
Well, that is a challenge. Could you flesh that out a little bit more,
Rita? Sure.
And offend more of us?
Well, the election showed us, I think everyone would agree, that the election showed us that regular American people are tired of being ignored by our government. We're tired of the status quo in Washington, and we want change. And so it made sense on one level for America to elect a president who is altogether different from career politicians and who promised to shake things up in D.C. But the fact is, a lot of the things he says, the language he uses, and the attitudes he expresses are squarely at odds with conservative values and certainly with Christian values. I'm talking about values like humility, kindness, wisdom, restraint, and graciousness. When we talk about making America great, apart from those qualities, then it just ends up sounding like greed, pride, and self-interest. I'm also concerned, Dean, about seeing the Republican Party become enamored with electing candidates who can win, even if they don't reflect traditional conservative values. As conservatives, we know that Republican and conservative are not synonymous, but those outside the Republican tent don't really see it that way. They will identify President Trump with conservatism, and I'm just really concerned that that will be harmful for us.
Well, Rita, from the comments you've just made, would you say then that your book is primarily a political book?
No, I wouldn't. And thanks for asking, because that is an important point for people to know. The fact is, I am far less interested in politics than I am in issues. So this book is about understanding what it really means to be a conservative, understanding the appeal of the conservative worldview. I think we've lost that over time. It's about equipping conservatives to have a deep understanding of the most important and controversial policy issues. And finally, it's about how every one of us can be a part of two very practical solutions that we mentioned before, one to restore government and the other to restore our culture.
Well, Rita, to help flesh that out a little bit more, I want to quote some really good questions you ask in your introduction. First, you ask, how do we cling to truth when Oxford Dictionary says we are in a post-truth world? That was in 2016. And how do we inspire a renewed commitment to religious liberty when the tenets of our very faith are an affront to so many who we seek to inspire? Third, you ask, How do we make a compelling case for natural marriage in a culture that is dominated by casual sex and rampant, easy divorce, and even by redefinition? And finally, you ask, how do we convince a culture to exalt virtue when that same culture worships at the altar of choice? So those are the kinds of specific questions you address in your book, and which we'll be talking about over the next several weeks in our book series. Order your book now so you can follow along. So against that background, Rita, do you ever think that conservative is a lost cause?
No, I never do, because conservatism is about carrying this banner. That's the way I think of it. We're carrying a banner of truth and virtue. And we know as Christians that our cause will ultimately win. So our job today, no matter what we see around us, no matter the turmoil going on in our society, the crazy things happening in our government, our job is to be faithful in carrying the banner, to be obedient, and to leave the results to God.
Rita, it reminds me of the Pied Piper. Why don't you just start blowing your horn and everybody's going to flock along behind you with your banner? That's a great picture to have here. Well, Rita, that sounds a lot like a theme that carries us along when it seems like everything we believe in seems to be going in the wrong direction. We can easily get bogged down in the slough of despair and despond. So we have to keep reminding ourselves, as we say to ourselves repeatedly, we won't give up, we won't give in, and we won't quit until we win. And to that end, Rita, we'll be spending, as I said, the next several weeks walking through this book and exploring each of the chapters in depth. So if you'd like to order your own copy, say it again, Rita, how do they do it?
The best way right now is my website, RitaMDunaway.com. That's Rita, M as in Mary, or M as in Mama, Dunaway.com. There's a button right there you can click that will let you order straight from the publisher, and that's the way to get it quickest. You can also order it from Amazon, but right now you might have a little bit of a wait if you order from Amazon.
Let me also add a little bit more weight to why we are going through this book and how other people have seen this book. So I'm going to give you a taste of what some of America's leading champions of our Judeo-Christian roots and constitutional principles have said about Rita's book. So this isn't just my opinion. I think it's a great book, but not many people are going to go out and buy it because I said so. Although I do say so. Michael Ferris, for example, as I mentioned earlier, he is the founder of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, Patrick Henry College, and the Convention of States Project. And today, he is the president of Alliance Defending Freedom. That is a nationally, internationally respected organization defending our liberties. And here's what he said in the foreword to Rita's book. Quote, Rita understands that persuasiveness requires us to truly listen to the other party in the communication and to always treat them with respect and kindness, even when we disagree. And he continues, in addition, being against something will only take us so far. We have to have a message that is visionary and positive. That is especially true, and you said this yourself, Rita, that is especially true with younger audiences. Finally, he says, we believe in freedom, and we will all be a bit closer to preserving it when we believe and practice the ideals found in this book. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, if people could see me, I'm blushing.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and Michael Ferris, I just can't say enough good things about him. Not only what he has done and what he has accomplished already in his life on behalf of Christians and families and religious liberty, but just having had the privilege of getting to know him personally, he is the real deal. He's a man of integrity, and I just have so much admiration for him. So it was a great honor to me for him to agree to write the foreword for the book.
Well, in addition to that, Jim DeMint, who's a former U.S. senator and past president of Heritage Foundation in Washington, wrote this, quote, and then he cites the title of your book, Restoring America's Soul defines conservatism as a philosophy that conserves things we want to keep. Then it details what values and principles we must keep and explains how Americans can conserve them. That's the application. And he continues, I haven't read a simpler, clearer description of conservatism or a better indictment of the forces that are trying to destroy the ideas that make America great. Senator Jim DeMint. Third, Tom Coburn, also a former U.S. senator from Oklahoma, said this. Very briefly, he says, the prescriptions outlined in Restoring America's Soul are just what the doctor ordered for the beleaguered conservative movement. And finally, just one more quote. This comes from Mark Meckler, president of the Convention of States Project. He says, again, referring to your book, Restoring America's Soul is a masterful how-to book for conservatives who are engaged in influencing those around them. Rita Dunaway convincingly argues that it is not enough to simply be conservative. Conservatives must also be able to articulate our principles in a compelling, simple, and positive way if we are to preserve what's special about America. In this book, Dunaway provides multiple examples of why this is important and how to do it in regard to some of the most pressing issues of our day. This book is a great read for our times. Rita, do you have a closing comment on all of this?
Well, I'd like to close by just going back to some of the questions you posed for our audience at the very beginning, because when we decided on the title for the book and I was processing that with the publisher, I wasn't sure at first about calling it Restoring America's Soul, because I asked myself, well, can a country have a soul? And so the answer that I eventually came up with was, well, of course a country doesn't have a soul in the same sense that a person has a soul. But if we were to talk about a country as having a soul, I think that soul would consist of the nature of its culture and its government, the characterizations of culture and government. And with regard to culture, I would say with specific emphasis on the health of the church and the vibrancy of the family, the health of the family in that country. And I am just really burdened by the state of our culture and our government in America today. And it is my desire that we, as Christians in particular, are trained and equipped and convicted to do everything we can to restore health to America's soul.
Well, Rita, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. One more time, how can people get a copy of your book?
RitaMDunaway.com. You can order it there. You can also find it on Amazon. You might have to wait a little while to get your copy from Amazon. So RitaMDunaway.com.
Well, again, thank you. Our special guest and also co-host of this program has been Rita Dunaway, introducing her new book entitled Restoring America's Soul. She'll be back with us again next week for part two of this special series on her book. And again, the title is Restoring America's Soul. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We also want to thank our generous sponsors of Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway, along with one of our church supporters, Garber's Church of the Brethren, located at 1275 Garber's Church Road in Harrisonburg. Finally, we want to thank so many of you for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881 Harrisonburg, 22803. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Rejoice, rejoice, rejoice.